Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, brought to you today by Casper Mattresses, revolutionizing the mattress industry. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/lunch and using lunch as your coupon code. We'll be telling you a little bit more about that later in the show, but good, bad, crazy martinis today, plus a special tribute at the end. And Jim, let's start with the good. Obviously, conservatives frustrated beyond belief. A lot of hair pulled out over the past several months as a result of people coming to the realization that, yes, Donald Trump is the Republican presidential nominee, but sometimes lost in that shuffle is how much not only conservatives are horrified by the idea of Hillary Clinton potentially becoming the next president, but a lot of Democrats are having a hard time hitching their wagon to her as well. The latest example of this is Maggie Hassan. She is the governor of New Hampshire. She's a Democrat, and she's challenging Kelly Ayotte for the U.S. Senate seat up in New Hampshire. She was interviewed by Manu Raju of CNN, and he asked her a fairly simple question after pointing out that Hillary Clinton is not seen by many people as trustworthy.
64% of voters in a recent CNN ORC poll believe Clinton is not honest or trustworthy. And asked three times, Hassan would not give her opinion.
Do you think that she's honest and trustworthy?
I support Hillary Clinton for the presidency because her experience and her record demonstrate that she's qualified to hold the job.
You think she's honest?
She has a critical plan, among others, for making college more affordable.
But you think that she's trustworthy?
I think that she has demonstrated a commitment always to something beyond herself, bigger than herself.
Is she trustworthy? Man, did you see that Michael Phelps race last night? Wow. Tough room, Jim.
Is she trustworthy? Hey, Casper mattresses are fantastic. yeah, you just kind of see this endless effort to change that topic. We should point out, Greg, that basically she came out today and said, yes, she does. The spin wasn't quite, look, when I said no, I totally meant yes, but that basically was the gist of it. Clearly, she woke up this morning with a horse's head in her bed and said, oh, no, she's totally trustworthy. I trust her with my life, not that it's at stake.
Wow. So, I mean, Hillary's numbers, and we'll get into this a little bit in the next martini, are not good, but she's obviously ahead of Trump in the key states and in most of the national polls. So what's your read on how close Democrats are willing to attach themselves to her at this point? Because most of them probably at this point think she will be the next president.
Leadership you can trust or not trust. At this point, what difference does it make? Really seems to summarize the Clinton. Trust is overrated is basically the Clinton pitch right now. And sadly, a large portion of the electorate is saying, yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, it is this year, unfortunately, at least at this point. Let's move to the bad martini. And this is courtesy of Monmouth University polling. They are out with a new poll in Florida. It's a state that the Republicans absolutely have to win. There's no mathematical scenario where Donald Trump gets to 270 without winning Florida. And according to Monmouth, quote, Hillary Clinton holds a 9-point lead over Donald Trump in the crucial swing state of Florida. Hillary Clinton holds a 9-point lead over Donald Trump in the crucial swing state of Florida. She's at 48%, Trump at 39%, Gary Johnson at 6%, Jill Stein at 1%, 5% undecided. Here's the most depressing part for me, Jim. Not only the fact that Clinton is also slightly ahead on the economy and on dealing with terrorism, but the popularity numbers. Just 1 in 3 voters, 36%, have a favorable opinion of Clinton, while 50% hold an unfavorable view of her. Likewise, 33% have a favorable opinion of Trump, while 54% hold an unfavorable view of him. So people in Florida, just like most people around the country, can't stand Hillary Clinton, but they can't stand somebody else a little bit more.
If Republicans had not nominated Donald Trump, there's an excellent chance this race would be looking very different. And just kind of pointing out, looking at Florida, where her lead seems to be leading, you know, going up significantly in the Real Clear Politics average, it's now 4.5%. You want to look at Ohio, she's ahead by 2.5%. If only Republicans had somebody running from Florida or Ohio, Greg. If only we had one of those, they'd help out. I mean, you can go down the list. You know, Virginia, it's 10 points. New Hampshire, 8.5. I guess you could say the good news is that, you know, Missouri and Arizona are still looking safe. And right now, Georgia, actually, technically, Clinton is ahead now by 0.3 percentage points. So there you go. Again, your focus on Florida is really important because, look, yes, you know, Pennsylvania was always going to be a tough stretch for a Republican candidate. Wisconsin, Michigan, these are states in the upper Midwest that A lot of people said, okay, maybe the right Republican who could really mobilize those blue-collar voters, those gun owners, maybe it could happen. But Florida was that state that, you know, Mitt Romney came within 2 percentage points of winning last time. He was not far away. This is not a state that's really tough for Republicans to win and drifting away for them. You can make that argument for the changing demographics of Virginia, which we talked about earlier this week, or Colorado. Florida should be still a pretty winnable state. Rick Scott and you know, Rubio is looking pretty strong in the Senate race. Well, it is drifting away. This was a state that Trump was doing fairly well in compared to the other swing states. I think it's safe to say that if he doesn't win Florida, it'd be very surprising to see him lose Florida but still manage to win a place like Ohio or Pennsylvania or states like that. So, you know, I don't know if they got to do more rallies there, open up more staffing there, become a completely different person. You know, something's got to be done because this is not a state that Donald Trump could afford to lose if he wants to win the presidency.
Good foreshadowing there for our crazy martini in just a moment. You mentioned that Rubio is doing better than Trump. According to this poll, he's ahead of Patrick Murphy in a hypothetical matchup, 48-43. He's ahead of Alan Grayson, 50-39%. Interestingly, 66% of people in Florida don't know enough about Alan Grayson to have an opinion of him, Jim. So I'm not sure what he needs to do to get people's attention. But apparently, being insane is not enough.
Yeah. Are you a little unnerved? Like we've discussed of you know, Murphy being the empty suit, having everything handed to him by daddy, not really having done much in life. You know, that you want to talk about the generic Democrat. Patrick Murphy is pretty much the generic Democrat. But you know, Grayson being the kind of guy who makes Trump look well mannered and, you know, polite and be, you know, well behaved. Are you a little unnerved that they're doing roughly equivalent? Like, don't you think Grayson should be the kind of thing that should be, you know, that he should be in the 30s somewhere and really, because, you know, that even Democrats would say, oh, I can't stand that guy?
You would think so. Honest thinking and rational people would think so. But there's a certain percentage of people who will vote for their party no matter who the nominee is. But if you're losing sleep over the prospect of a Hillary Clinton presidency and heaven forbid even a possibility, it seems remote at this point, of an Alan Grayson Senate victory, rest assured you can at least get a literal good night's sleep thanks to Casper Mattresses, the mattress industry. For many years, forcing consumers into paying ridiculously high markups, Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. Time magazine even named it one of the best inventions of 2015, and it's also going to save you in the pocketbook. Mattresses often cost over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost just $500 for a twin size, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. Obviously, you can spend a lot more than that for something of a lower quality.
Yeah, and you know, something that stands out to me, Greg, is buying a Casper mattress they say is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns on a 100-night home trial. Now, I don't know about you, Greg. If by 100 nights you can't decide, I'm pretty sure by that point you know if it's a good mattress or not. If you don't love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend one-third of your life on it. And as they point out, best of all, Casper mattresses are made in America.
And this is a relatively new product. It's only been around for a few years, but it's getting rave reviews. It's the result of an in-house team of engineers spending thousands of hours developing this. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink, as they call it, and just the right bounce. It's breathable, designed sleeps, cool to help you regulate your temperature throughout the night. So those night sweats from having nightmares about the presidential race won't be a problem with the Casper. So all of this is good for you, especially in this election cycle. Get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/lunch. That's CASPER.com/lunch, and using lunch as your coupon code there on the site. And of course, we're thankful to Casper for sponsoring the Three Martini Lunch today. So get your rest. You're going to need it for the next 4 years, no matter who wins. And casper.com/lunch is a good way to get there. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And where different websites, different reporters, different editors come down on this presidential race has been interesting to watch. And one of the very first to get on with the Trump campaign, and certainly the most vocal, has been Breitbart.com. And Donald Trump has obviously been pleasantly reading their site for a number of months now, and they continue to back him across the board. And now the two are merging. This is the New York Times story. Donald J. Trump has shaken up his presidential campaign for the second time in 2 months, hiring a top executive from the conservative website Breitbart News and promoting a senior advisor in an effort to right his faltering campaign. Stephen Bannon, the executive chairman of Breitbart News, will become the Republican campaign's chief executive, and Kellyanne Conway, a senior advisor and pollster for Mr. Trump, and his running mate Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, will become the campaign manager. Paul Manafort, the campaign chairman, will retain his title, but the staffing change hammered out apparently on Sunday and formally announced today was seen by some as a demotion for Mr. Manafort, although Kellyanne Conway told the Wall Street Journal that's not the case. They're known as the core four today, Bannon, Conway, Manafort, as well as Rick Gates, the deputy to Paul Manafort. So, Jim, we just got rid of Corey a couple of months ago. Corey got kicked out of the campaign entirely. Now Paul Manafort may or may not be getting demoted, but a shakeup of this magnitude certainly suggests that not all is right, which is true, less than 3 months from Election Day. And the addition of Steve Bannon means that scorched earth will be definitely the official policy going forward.
Listeners to our program probably at least have some idea of who Steve Bannon is. I went back and I checked. It was 2011. I first met him, and he had done the documentary Palin, the Undefeated. And I actually, you know, met him, got to watch the film with him, talk about it afterwards. And he came across to me as a, at that point, quite sane. And in fact, maybe even a little bit of a visionary. I really liked what he had done with that film. You could tell this was a guy who had really studied storytelling and myth and legend and Joseph Campbell and all that, and was kind of applying all of that to the story of Sarah Palin. A year or two later, the Andrew Breitbart dies, maybe one of the great indicators of how the world went wrong. And Steve Bannon was the guy best positioned to take over. Now, if you talk to people who have left Breitbart.com since then, they don't paint a particularly flattering portrait of Bannon. Now, I'll let listeners decide whether they think that's fair or not. I think it is safe to describe Steve Bannon as the man who took Breitbart, what it was under Andrew Breitbart, and turned it into what it is today. I also recall seeing him at some event about how Republicans had to rebound from 2012 and what they had to learn. And there was somebody who kept pointing out that, you know, look, there were a couple of key demographics Republicans were getting slaughtered in amongst, you know, probably most prominently the Latinos. And this was a winnable one. And by golly, if Republicans just could do better amongst that, they could end up winning and build a, you know, they demonstrated an ability to win at the state legislative level and gubernatorial level in the House and the Senate. And by golly, they just needed to do this at the presidential level. And Bannon said, all of that is nonsense. It is a slow walk to socialism. And it just struck me as a guy who was not going to, you know, everything was in the autopsy from the RNC. He was the opposite of it. And you look at the appeal of Breitbart.com today, the kind of folks who they spotlight, the kind of writers who are front and center there. I particularly enjoyed, Greg, the moment-to-moment coverage of how Paul Neyland was going to beat Paul Ryan in the primary last week. To judge from the way they were covered, this thing was neck and neck, and I believe it was, to quote Matthew Boyle, one of their correspondents, Paul Ryan was fighting for his political life right there. And he, you know, Paul Ryan won 85% to 15%. There was never any indication that Paul Ryan was in any danger and that Paul Neyland was this going to be the next Dave Brat or anything like that. So people like me look at the coverage of Breitbart and say, this is just, it's not telling you the news. It's not telling you what's happening. It's telling you what they want to happen. It's a mythology. It's this vision of the world as they want it to be. It's an exercise in denial. And bringing Steve Bannon to run the Trump campaign just seems an affirmation of that. No, we're doing fine. We're going to keep doing what we're doing, and it's going to work. I don't foresee great things coming from this, so we'll see how this shakes out. But, I mean, of all the people in the world, if you thought Lewandowski was a disaster and Manafort was not working out, Bannon, you'd be better with Bruce Banner. You'd be better with almost anybody else. We'll see how it shakes out, but I would expect to see all the problems of the Trump campaign are now just going to get turned up to 11. This is now Spinal Tap. I actually found myself just feeling like emotionally exhausted upon reading the news today. So we'll see how it pans out. If he ends up winning, maybe I'm totally wrong on all this, but I'm just not seeing it. And maybe it was just something else that was weighing on my mind in the news in the last 24 hours, Greg.
Yeah, certainly could be. Kellyanne Conway is actually a pretty good hire.
I mean, as far as pollsters go, she's pretty solid. And somebody was saying, look, she'll help Trump understand the gender gap. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, Do you think that never came up with Manafort? Do you think no one has mentioned this to Trump? I think he's been told about that. I think he just doesn't care what any of his advisors are saying. So maybe that's, you know, maybe that's effective. Maybe Bannon will have less effect than anybody thinks. So there you go.
All right. As foreshadowed at the beginning of the program, in addition to three martinis, we do have a champagne toast and tribute today.
Washington, the McLaughlin Group, the American original. For over three decades, the sharpest minds, best sources, hardest talk.
There you go. John McLaughlin died yesterday at the age of 89. Since 1982, famously hosting the McLaughlin Group. Fred Barnes, who was a longtime panelist on that show, saying that John McLaughlin essentially created a new type of political television, literally out of nothing. By getting reporters to come together and creating a dynamic atmosphere. Some would call it combative. It certainly was at times. Saturday Night Live hilariously spoofed the McLaughlin Group in the early 90s with Dana Carvey brilliantly lampooning McLaughlin for constantly calling the panelists wrong. Famous names came from that, Barnes being one of them. Pat Buchanan was on there a lot, Bob Novak, Jack Tramond. I'm going to let you obviously talk about it, but here's a clip from pretty recently, just to give you folks a flavor of this if you're not familiar with the show.
Hillary Clinton will have a security clearance lifted, yes or no? Pat?
Yes.
Eleanor?
No.
Tom?
Yes.
Clarence?
No.
Answer, yes. Bye-bye.
And so there you go. Imagine that, Pat Buchanan and Eleanor Clift disagreeing on one of those questions, Jim. But John McLaughlin, an American original, and it was must-see television for many years.
It was. And I'm kind of – it was interesting to see some of the discussion yesterday of people saying, ah, you know, the McLaughlin Group was the start of the shout fest on what cable news has become. And I don't really think that was it. And there's two things about it. One is that, you know, it wasn't – there wasn't fluff on the McLaughlin Group. Generally, this, you know, there was – they talked foreign policy. They talked economics. You know, they talked whatever was going on in Washington. And it's—I wouldn't say I grew up watching it religiously, but I watched it pretty regularly. And it was a fun show to watch. And it was—you know—one was that even if they were shouting and disagreeing passionately, it was very clear. I think it came through in almost every interaction. That whole gang—you know—they all got along with each other. They all liked each other and hung around with each other. And didn't, you know, there was never any you know seething animosity amongst them. No matter how strongly they disagreed. And secondly, they were writers, Greg. And this is one of the things that kind of, I think, stands out compared to cable news. And if somebody wants to say, Jim, you're on CNN, you're on Fox News sometimes. Yeah. And I've seen people who are on television because their life is television. And you know what? God bless them. Great for them. You know, there's room for that. I just felt like there was a time for people who write for a living and who actually kind of think, care about these things and actually think about these things. Can we get a half hour a week? And that was what the McLaughlin Group was. It was time for us political geeks and nerds to enjoy arguing about these things. It was different from everything that came afterwards. I don't think it's, you know, being mean to say McLaughlin and Clift and Buchanan and Barnes and Kondracki and Germond and all the regular crew, they weren't hired for their looks. You know, this was about, they were smart people, all with passionate beliefs and kind of making their case. And yes, it was kind of fun to watch him saying, wrong! You know, maybe he kind of turned into a caricature of himself. But there was a time when politics was a lot more fun than it is today. I don't know if it's, maybe it was that little bit of irreverence, that little bit of you know, impassioned disagreement. It was a spice that made that food taste good. And maybe that's, you know, maybe what we're being served today is the spice itself without the actual meal. I am sad to see John McLaughlin pass away. I am sad to see the McLaughlin Group. It sounds like the show will continue in one form or another, but it definitely feels like its era is passing. And I will miss it, and I kind of feel like we've lost something in our politics. So farewell, John McLaughlin. You will not be forgotten anytime soon.
On that note, Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for tuning in today to the Three Martini Lunch, and thanks again to Casper Mattresses for sponsoring this edition. Remember, you can get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper, CASPER.com/lunch and using lunch as your coupon code.